Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Hello. Welcome back to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on bounce back loan fraud. I am joined by senior barrister Cameron Brown QC from Red Lion Chambers in London. Cameron has considerable knowledge and experience of compliance issues and internal investigations. He is regularly instructed by leading regulatory agencies and he has appeared in a number of cases involving complex market frauds, international corruption and legal professional privilege issues. Cameron is also ranked in the Legal 500 and in Chambers and Partners. Thank you so much for joining me today, Cameron.
Good morning, Hattie. Thanks for having me along.
Absolute pleasure. The Bounce Back Loan Scheme was announced by Chancellor Rishi Sunak on the 27th of April 2020. It was the largest of three COVID-19 related business support loan schemes, and it sought to provide small and medium-sized enterprises a simple, quick and easy solution for those in need of smaller loans. The government stated that as of July 21, £80 billion worth of emergency government-backed loans were provided to businesses during the COVID crisis. Bounce back loans equated to around £47 billion worth of government support, with over 1.5 million applications that were approved. A report published by the National Audit Office in December 21 states that to achieve the policy intention of supporting small businesses quickly during the pandemic, the government prioritised payment speed over almost all other aspects. The scheme facilitated faster lending by removing credit and affordability checks, and it allowed businesses to self-certify their application documents. In today's episode, we'll be discussing what fraud on bounce back loans have been about, the scale of the problem, and the largest fraud case to have been convicted so far. All very interesting and eye-opening stuff. Right, Cameron, my dear. Let's talk about this. Let's make it sexy and exciting, shall we?
As much as one can do, yep, absolutely.
Yes, indeed. What level of support did bounce back loans provide? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, if we can cast our minds back to the unpleasant days in the middle of the pandemic, the government had introduced a number of schemes initially to try and get monies out to the business community. And in fairness to them, they'd had quite a lot of criticism because the banks were being required to carry out extensive checks and monies weren't getting out to businesses as they needed them. And so, as you've reported, in April 2020, they came along with the idea of the Bounce Back Loan Scheme. And the real, as you've indicated, the real idea behind it was to try to get a fast track scheme, principally for smaller businesses who were being hammered at that time during the pandemic. And broadly what it meant was that if you were a small business, you could get a loan up to a maximum of £50,000. And that represented 25% of your turnover. And the idea behind it, that was 100% guaranteed by the government. Although they used the banks to get the money out, it was 100% guaranteed by the government. And it was very generous in the sense that there were no repayments for 12 months. And the government would cover the first 12 months of any fees and any interest. So for many small businesses at that time, this was a real lifeline. And it's very easy sometimes, I suppose, retrospectively to say, well, you know, the level of checks was extremely poor. But of course, at that particular moment in time, the government's top priority was trying to get money out to these small businesses who were really struggling.
No, indeed. And it, I mean, it's been an extraordinary 2 years over the pandemic for businesses, whether you're a small business, a medium sized business, literally everybody at most points of the last 2 years had to shut shop overnight, lock the doors. That's it. And it, you know, lots of people were worried for very, very various reasons. And I think that, yes, there has been criticism, and I've read lots of criticism about how the government just dished out money and bits and pieces. But I've heard many more people saying it was a lifesaver that they could get access to that money at the speed that they got access to it. But let's talk about now and just explain, what do we mean by bounce back loan fraud? And what would you say has been the most common ways in which fraud has been committed on bounce back loans?
Well, there's a number of ways it was committed. In essence, it relates to fraud around these loans. And what was happening was, because of the accelerated nature of the scheme, because of the government's intention that in fact you would get the money broadly within 24 hours of approval. So very, very quick. I'm sure anybody who's normally gone into the bank to get a mortgage or a loan, particularly today, you know, it can take a number of weeks.
Yes.
They were getting money within 24 hours.
Well, I've never seen any loan or any lending delivered in 24 hours, I have to say.
It was astonishing. But the difficulty with it and the potential flaw to the scheme was that lenders, when they were handing this money out, didn't really go in to check the provenance of what they were being told by the people who were asking for the money. But by that, I mean, they weren't checking. Well, actually, if you say, you know, I'm a painter and a decorator and I earned £420,000 last year, that was taken as given. There weren't
yes.
really extensive checks going
no
on.
No checks, because we say
no
that
checks,
every,
really at all.
Everybody had to self-certify themselves almost.
Exactly. So really, there were six main types of fraud that was going on. The basic one was not your typical fraudster. It was, in fact, an individual who thought, right, I really need the money for my business, so I'm going to overinflate the amount of turnover because I know it's not going to be checked. So I'm going to say, right, in fact, I earned last year 200,000 when my real turnover was, for example, say more like 50,000. So they would inflate the actuals, knowing that wasn't true, to try and get more money for them. But they potentially legitimate businesses operating, but for the purposes of this, inflating the size of their turnover. Other examples is, in fact, you would have people, fraudsters, proper fraudsters, stealing the identity of other businesses.
Oh God!
And then making applications in their names.
That's worrying,
yeah.
Because it's not just them setting up sort of a rogue limited company, which people can do online very quickly and for very little
yes.
money, but to steal the identity of another business and apply as them. And
yes.
that's extraordinary. But wasn't the money being paid into the business bank account? So how did they get access to the money? What, set up another bank account?
I mean, there's various reported cases, but they would also set up various bank accounts and change the names and et cetera.
Oh, God.
So there were various identities. That was really the sort of second type. They also, perhaps what the one I've had the greatest exposure to, was setting up fake businesses using shell companies.
I've heard of that.
So they would, in essence, have somebody who would be put up as a director, really had no real intention to be the director of that company. They knew what they were doing. they would set up a fake business on the face that they maybe generate some false invoices, but the reality is it was a shell company. It had no trading activity
and no intention to either. It was literally we're saying that these companies were literally set up to get access to a bounce back loan or two, and we'll go on to talking about bigger fraud on that, and that's it basically, to run off with the money.
The other type, which is frankly extraordinary, that if they got away with this, was that they would use businesses that had already been dissolved. So a business has gone bankrupt.
Oh, no.
And notwithstanding that, despite the fact that business is bankrupt...
And on company's house is registered as insolvent or...
And registered as bankrupt, they were able to make applications...
That's worrying. Because you think, Cameron, that the first thing, or at least a check that should have taken place, if people, you know, were able to raise bounce back loans on the back of dissolved and insolvent and bankrupt companies, is that company at least exists. I mean, are we saying that the government did zero checks? Zero, zero, zero.
Well, there's going to be, I think there's, the dialogue now is there's a bit of dispute breaking out between who ultimately is responsible for all this. Because I think the line now is, in fact, that's down to the banks. That's the line coming from the government.
Good God. The banks are not going to really like that. They're going to think, hold on a moment, Mr. Government and Mrs. Government. You pushed us to do this at speed. We went crazy trying to staff it because a lot of banks had a lot of staff working from home, like most businesses did, that operated during the pandemic and lockdowns. And now you're going to point the finger at us because we didn't do something that you're saying we should have done. Oh, blame game's going to be thrown around there.
So there is, I think, and you can see it in the dialogue, and certainly ministers have, and the main organisation, the British Business Bank, that oversaw this scheme, they've been called into committee, and indeed some of the bankers, and there's an interesting dialogue, as I say. But in terms of the other method they would also use, is that they also make multiple applications in relation to these loans. So it wouldn't just be you are J Blog Business, you would apply for one bank to NatWest, and then you would make a similar application
to
Barclays. So effectively your falsification of your total turnover, because of course you're saying to NatWest I'm earning 200,000 in turnover, and you're also saying the same thing to HSBC or
and getting more than one bounce back loan for the same company.
And getting more than one bounce back loan.
Goodness gracious.
Certainly the evidence that's coming back and the findings coming back was that it certainly wasn't, despite the scheme being introduced in May of 2020, it wasn't in fact until June of 2020 that they introduced what they call double application checks.
Right.
So a month had gone by where people could, if they wanted to, make double applications.
But then, Cameron, couldn't it have been the case where somebody thought, you know what, I'll go with Santander, but I'll also go with Lloyds to see who's going to act quicker?
Yes.
I mean, look, obviously they would have only taken one of the loans when they were offered, but then,
yes,
you know, that you were saying there was a period of around a month where the applications were not being checked for where they were being made from and duplicated.
So there's a period of a month, and by that time, 61% of all applications are already being made in terms of the total number of applications. So by that time, the fox was already in the hen house, if I could put
yes.
it in this term.
Yes.
And the reality is, of course, yes, there may have been legitimate individuals who might have just applied to multiple banks and then only taken out one loan. But if you are a fraudster and you have one company and you want to make multiple applications, if there isn't a system in place until June, by then you have the whole of May 2020.
Yes.
If you so choose to make those sort of double applications.
So, it's been reported that in the Guardian, Financial Times and other very prominent media outlets that the government lost around 4.9 billion to COVID loan fraud. And we're trying to look at, well, how big is the problem? In December 21, the BBC reported that as much as £17 billion may never be repaid due to fraudulent activity.
Yeah, I mean, it's a massive, to be frank, it's a massive problem.
That's a lot of money, billion.
Yeah, I mean, if you, back in July 2020, so fairly early on, there was a centre-right policy exchange think tank that actually started to flag this problem. And at that time, they were estimating that it was, obviously these are estimates, but between 1.3 billion and 7.9 billion. Certainly by the end of May of 2020, they'd had around about 1,900 reports, HMRC, 1,900 reports of fraud. So the issues with this scheme were being flagged. It isn't
early on, very early on, by the seams, it sounds of it. You know, very soon after it kicked off, where it started.
And then you have further reports. So by September 2020, HMRC is telling the Public Accounts Committee that it was working on the assumption that the money paid out under the furlough scheme was subject to a... That's not the bounce back loan, that's the furlough scheme, which was another scheme which I'm sure we're all familiar with, where funds were released...
To help employers with salaries, yes.
But certainly, so far as that was concerned, that they were looking at a 5 to 10% what they call error and fraud rate. So broadly, what I think the figures that HMRC were looking at was a figure of between 5 to 10 in terms of the total amount that were lent out. So across all of the three main schemes, about 80 billion goes out. And so therefore, I think you have probably a top figure of fraud and error of around about 8 billion, which is a staggering sum of money.
Staggering.
But these, of course, are estimates. So, you know, if it's 5%, you're talking 4 billion.
But it's gonna cost to unravel this as well, right? And where does the cost of that, what is that attached to? Is that attached to the fact that that cost exists for a workforce, for people, for organisations, for the government, to be able to chase the fraud, to dig it up, to prosecute it, or to put it right and get recompense? So there's that cost as well. But I mentioned earlier, 1.5 million applications for bounce back loans was approved. You know, when you look at the scale of that, and even if you said, well, actually, I still think it's even though the numbers are big, it's probably a minority of fraudulent activity that went on that you know, the government needs to seek out and prosecute or put right. But it's still going to be a big number. Any percentage of 1.5 million is still going to be a lot of money, even if you take it at the top end of £50,000 per bounce back loan.
It is large. It is very, very large numbers. So far as there's some more recent estimates, I think the National Audit Office, as of December 2021, was saying, look, in total, they expect that 17 billion will not be repaid.
Yeah.
And of that, 11% were fraudulent. So they're looking at a figure of 4.9 billion. And that is one of the things that led, as you may be aware of, the resignation of the government efficiency minister, Lord Agnew.
Yes, I read that.
When he made the thing, he walked out of the House of Lords and he said this, that he presided over one of the most colossal cock-ups in recent government management, and taxpayers ultimately are going to be the ones paying for this. And in terms of the banks as well, and what I've been saying, I said there's this dialogue.
It's going to be very interesting to see how this is. First of all, who's going to be blamed? But I think, you know, they need to really put the blame aside. I think, how are we going to sort it out?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I that's a very good point. But just on its most basic level, you know, going back to that point, we were just talking about double applications. 22,000 of those, they now estimate, were double applications for the same business. Now, that's a figure of around about just over 1 billion in double applications.
Gosh.
And in terms of over 1,000 loans were given to companies that had already been dissolved.
That is something that, I tell you, that bothers me. That bit bothers me.
Mary, isn't it?
Do you know, that is, because you'd think the very least, I get it, and I take my hat off to the government during the pandemic, because I think they did a lot of things to help a lot of people, right? The majority got help, the majority did not. There was food parcels going out, all sorts of things.
Yes.
But to not even check that the company that's applying is actually a bona fide company that's trading...
Yeah.
Is, I think, a big, big boo-boo. And I wonder whether the banks should hold their hands up to that one, because the application's being made to the bank. So, I mean, you know, look, we could sit here and argue how the problems happened. Maybe the bank couldn't staff it quick enough. I mean, I couldn't get hold of my bank most times during the pandemic because the queues on the phones were too long and all sorts of stuff. But I think that really what is going to be done to resolve it, it is extraordinary that it's even happened. But let's talk about the cases that you've been involved in. What were the highlight points of this particular case that I know you've been involved in? Tell me the juicy details.
So the National Crime Agency brought a prosecution involving two gentlemen who, in essence, headed up an international money laundering network. And in essence, of what they were involved with was money laundering prior to the pandemic. They were involved in money laundering, and they and their modus operandi is that they would set up shell companies in a money-based laundering. In other words, they would have a large number of shell companies, and they would use that to launder the proceeds of crime, not related to Bounce Back Loan fraud, but crime generally.
Right.
And then when the pandemic came along, we say that they saw an opportunity, and in relation to that, that they were then involved in laundering the proceeds of these Bounce Back Loan frauds, fraudulent claims, in the region of around 10 million. So they had these companies already set up, and when these funds came along, they then laundered them through the existing shell companies that they already had in relation to their other criminal enterprise.
So they already had the shell companies, and they applied for the bounce back loans through these existing shell companies up to the tune of about £10 million.
Yeah, to be clear, these two particular gentlemen were, it wasn't the case that they were said to be directly behind the bounce back loan applications. They were processing them for their associates, for their criminal associates.
Right.
And they effectively facilitated removing a lot of that money out of this country, where a lot of it went overseas. And as I say, the figure that was involved was some 10 million. And certainly, in terms of their sentencing, the remarks that were made, that it was said that these individuals played a part in undermining government and financial institutions. And certainly the judge observed that the British taxpayer will be staggered and upset that part of their hard-earned tax contributions was going into the pockets of criminals. And it certainly did. In terms of, you know, financial investigation led to certainly their associates, not them personally, but their associates were having a very nice time spending the proceeds of bounce back loan fraud, including ski chalets, yachts in the Caribbean.
Oh, nice.
Purchasing various bits of fine art from various London art dealers. So they were living, you know, those involved in the generality were having a very nice time off the back of the hard work of the British taxpayer.
Goodness gracious me. And in terms of how they got caught, do we know how they got caught, or were they under investigation, as you said, prior to the pandemic anyway, and then this came out in the wash as part of it?
Yeah, so they were being, and there's no great secret, they were already being the subject of an investigation, and then while on bail in relation to that original investigation, they then, we say, took advantage of an opportunity in relation to the bounce back loan fraud.
Wow. And what were they jailed for? What was the jail sentences?
So in total, the two gentlemen combined received some 33 years.
Wow.
So the lead defendant, Mr. Terzian, received a sentence of 17 years. His associate, Mr. Crotchy Archer, received a sentence of 16 years, which in terms of money laundering is they're fairly high sentences.
Yes.
Long sentences.
Sort of the top of the spectrum.
Top of the, I think it's fair to say top of the spectrum, yeah.
Yes. Wow. Well, Cameron, that's all we've got time for.
Oh, right. OK, lovely. Well,
it does. I told you it goes very, very quickly, you know.
You did mention that. Lovely.
It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Not at all. Very nice to speak to you, Hattie. Thanks very much.
And what I'll say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com.